Welcome to Da Vinci's Discourse, where the minds of today's most innovative entrepreneurs are unveiled and explored. And my name is Kyle Campbell, your guide on this journey into the depths of the entrepreneurial psyche. So sit back, relax, and get ready to dive into the minds of the greats. This is Da Vinci's Discourse.
So Cliff, man, awesome to have you here, brother. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? I'm curious, if somebody were to ask you who you are, what would you tell them?
Who I am. I would say that I am somebody who is absolutely obsessed with helping people break free from anything such as beliefs, thoughts, feelings, emotions, or behaviors that are keeping them from living the life that they want to create in this world.
I love that, dude. So what do you do for an everyday basis? What do you do for a living?
Well, I mostly do coaching one-on-one with individuals. I offer a paid mastermind group for full-time self-employed business owners. And I create a ton of content. I have 52 podcasts, over 4,700 podcast episodes since 2005.
Wow. Oh, no kidding, man. So where do you think the best value that we can bring to an entrepreneurial audience is if we were to work together? Maybe limiting beliefs? What avenue do you think would be the best to go down?
Well, we could go down the avenue of our beliefs and the idea and the thoughts that every single belief that we have is a consequence. And the reality is that we're unconscious of more than 85% of the beliefs that we have. We've never even considered the fact that most of the thoughts and the feelings that we have on a day-by-day basis are brought on by things that we have no idea under the surface we have a strong belief about.
No kidding, dude. And a lot of the time it's bullshit. You get to the center of it and then you're like, wait a minute. You reframe the core of the belief or where it started originally. And then you're like, God damn, all of this time I've been looking at this situation that's occurred over and over again from the wrong lens, from the disempowered lens, which is fascinating, man. So what do you think this is? I'm very curious about this. What do you think is at the center of a belief? What at the core of it? What is the essence of a belief in general?
My understanding that a belief is nothing more than a thought that you feel certain is true. Or another way of thinking about it is a thought that you have a habit of thinking.
A habit of thinking, yes. And so where do they come from? I mean, my opinion is emotional experiences, and they create a complex, and then the complex is exercising its voice through beliefs that take place in our everyday conversations and actions. Where do you think they come from?
Well, they come from all sorts of different places and all different areas of life and seasons of life. So certainly our experiences are common. There is a story that I once heard about a baby that was set on top of a countertop. And that baby then crawled off of the side of the counter and fell on a hard floor. And when it fell on the hard floor, it looked over, and right next to it was green carpet from the living room. From that point forward, anytime that child was set down to crawl on the green carpet, it freaked out. Because that baby developed a belief that the cause of my pain was green carpet.
Right. And so I made an association with, he or she made an association with green carpet equals pain. And so there's this cause and effect that takes place.
So now every time there is green carpet, there's an experience of pain. I'm in danger again.
Right.
So that's just one example. And that's to agree with your point that experience is certainly one of them. Another one of the many places where we can develop beliefs from is somebody that we know, love, and trust. We respect them highly. We believe that they know far more. They have greater experience. They're much more wise than we are. And because they have told us something, we now believe it. We accept it. And so what happens is in the world of hypnosis, there's something called the power of suggestion.
Oh, yeah.
So when I say something to you, I make a suggestion. And when you agree with my suggestion, You just turned that into what's known as an auto suggestion, which means you just stored it as a subconscious belief that I agree with this. I am now suggesting to myself. So me suggesting things to you through this process, when you are in agreement with it, you now have developed a belief. It's like, wow, Cliff just said that if a baby was to fall off of a countertop and associate green carpet right next to it, that it's developed a belief. And the next time that baby does this, that could potentially happen. I agree with that. And so it's like, hey, now I have that as a belief. That is one way of doing this. So that another way is to accept something. Now, the interesting thing is that before the age of 7, we do not have what's called a critical thinking mind yet. So our brain waves are in a constant theta brainwave state, which is a very relaxed state. And in a theta brainwave state, anything that comes in is automatically assumed to be true. So imagine this, for the first 7 years of your life, Everything your parents said, everything your preschool teacher said, everything your religious pastor or Sunday school teacher said, everything the kids in the neighborhood said, everything you've heard on television, everything you've seen in television, or in movies, everything you've heard in the news, every conversation you overheard your parents talking about, All of that is accepted and stored as beliefs.
Which is freaking crazy, dude, because look at all the opportunity there is for a wrong, like a factually incorrect statement to be embedded in the unconscious of us as adults and have that belief that X is Y when actually X is Z. And then you're raised and believe your whole life that X is Y. And this can create all kinds of different mishaps in all kinds of different situations. And I love the hypnotic, the hypnotic suggestions. And I like to use this in marketing and even webinars. For example, as you're sitting on your chair and you're feeling the headphones on your head, you start to feel relaxed. And you're creating a belief in the moment that is you're suggesting to believe that you're feeling relaxed in this case, and you can make suggestions like by now you're probably wondering, and there's a kind of an embedded command in there, and so you're instilling a belief that, I mean, kind of, right? But you see what I mean? I love the suggestion point of it.
Yeah. And so what we call that is you're hyper suggestible. That means that because what happens is, right, if we can get you into an altered state of consciousness, if we can get you into a law where you're kind of flowing with the rhythm and you're kind of just in the moment, present, you're super focused on what's happening here, and you're not thinking about external threats and what do I have to do before this, after this, you could be in an alpha/theta or an alpha/theta brainwave state. And if you get there, you're hyper suggestible, which is why a lot of people get caught up into all sorts of manipulative sales and techniques and schemes.
Yeah, no kidding, right? And so it comes down to the ethics of it. I mean, you see this used in propaganda, for example. Like you can instill beliefs in somebody and then change their identity, the way that they look at themselves, with the beliefs that are now embedded. How do you think identity plays into the whole belief system? Because the way I look at it is beliefs are what control the actions that we do, what we say, and the identity is what's over top of the beliefs. And so it's identity, beliefs, action. And so you look at yourself as a certain way that you have a belief about that, and you can alter the belief, which alters the identity, which then of course alters the actions and the things that you say. Where do you think identity comes into the play?
That's an interesting philosophy. I've not heard of it that way, and I've not thought of identity in that way. And while I admit that I've not had enough time to process that, so I'm not in disagreement with what you've said, I would love to share with you what I think of identity. I think of identity is the sum total of our beliefs.
Ah, right.
And I think our identity is there are several different forms that I could think of as identity. If I think about my true source, who am I? I could tell you that I'm a divine spiritual being that's pure and holy, and I have nothing other than pure perfection, source, and connected to all that is.
That's my favorite answer to the first question that I asked you, by the way. That's right on the gold mine, dude.
If we're thinking identity, that's my identity. Yes. However, if we think about identity as most people think about identity, we're thinking of some attachment of our identity, not as who we truly are, but who we perceive ourselves to be.
Right.
It is that persona. And so what happens is it's actually a system of beliefs, or a belief system, about who do I need to be in this environment with these people in this situation for me to be safe. And my ego persona is trying to create a version of my identity that will be acceptable to Kyle, that will be amenable to him, that will gain his favor. And so there's a version of Cliff Ravenscraft, which is just a name that was given to this flesh body, here on this experience of life. And so therefore now here I am in this world engaging. And so I have maybe, you know, inferred a couple of things by the emails that I've received from Kyle, or I could even go so far as that Cliff has received from Kyle.
Okay, yeah.
And Cliff then went and watched a couple of YouTube videos after searching for the name of your Da Vinci discourses and saw how you're interacting. And he has a feeling about who you are and the kind of way that you're showing up in the world. And based upon all of Cliff's experiences of the past, he is now coming here with a mask, a persona, an act that will be the most pleasurable experience and interface with this guy that is also playing a role called Kyle.
You're right. Absolutely. The only thing that I disagree with is you placed ego as the persona, as one. Whereas I look at the ego as the self-perception that's able to identify different personas. You see, like Carl Jung talked about the map of the psyche, the persona is on the outside. The next step in is the ego, and then the anima, animus, shadow, and then the self at the very core of it, which is what you said is the answer, the all being consciousness, which is fascinating that you said that.
Yeah. And I don't spend a ton of my time sitting down thinking about what are the delineations. And that's why I said I haven't given a lot of thought to yours. And the way that you just restated what you believe, I would say there's a lot of alignment with how I feel about that. The ego is a portion of my essence that creates the story of who I believe that I am in this world.
Yes. And it's what gives you the impression. It's like if you didn't have an ego, if you were eating pasta, you wouldn't know to put it in your mouth or somebody else's mouth, you know, because there's no differentiation between the two of you. And so that's what I look at ego as. This is a fascinating conversation. Have you delved into the whole depth psychology? Carl Jung, Sigmund Freud, the kind of where the essence of
I've not read much of their material. I am 64% of the way through the Dreams, Some Reflections and Something, the autobiography of Carl Gustav Jung. But I'm very familiar with esoteric ways of thinking about creation, the world, the cosmos, Eastern philosophy, Taoism, Hinduism, Sikhism, Jainism, all of that. So I study a ton of those things. I also study, you know, New Age philosophy and shamanism and every esoteric form of Christianity and world religion and spirituality. And I find that it all pretty much everybody seems to be talking about the same exact thing, but using a lot of different language and from a lot of different perspectives and perceptions.
Mm. They're all talking about the same thing. I mean, this thing that we're experiencing right now, they're all talking about this. Same language as physics. I mean, it's the same thing that they're analyzing. It's just from a different viewpoint. How'd you get interested in this? The Eastern philosophies, the Eastern religions, what got you into it to begin with?
Well, from the time I was a kid, I was raised in an environment where I was surrounded. First of all, my parents were not very religious when I was a child. However, because of some things that I experienced in a public school system, my parents ended up putting me in a Catholic school from first grade through seventh grade. So here I am, a non-Catholic, attending Mass every Friday with all of my students and sitting in religious education class from a Catholic perspective for 7 years of my life. While on the weekends and every summer, I went to every vacation Bible school and every Sunday school class in every type of Protestant, evangelical, fundamentalist, Christian church you could possibly imagine. My mom and dad were totally cool with me going to all these different places. So I went to Nazarenes, Baptist, Southern Baptist, Methodist, Lutheran, all of the different Protestant flavors of Christianity. And what I realized is that everybody seemed to have a great deal of certainty that they were right, and everyone else was wrong on a lot of major key fundamental issues.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, this is interesting that everybody seems to be right and convinced of it, and everybody's convinced that everybody else has it wrong. So that caused me to be a very curious person. I asked lots of questions until I discovered that a lot of people were very uncomfortable with questions.
You're analyzing their beliefs that are kind of based upon something that's unanalyzed to begin with. And so it throws them off tilt, and they're getting very uncomfortable with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what I discovered is that a lot of people said, listen, you need to stop asking questions and just believe.
I know. That's, man. It's like, come on, dude. It's not my nature.
It's not my nature. And the thing is I fought against my nature to be in communion, to be in relation with them. So I developed a persona that I would tell you that my identity, you know, if you would have asked me, who is Cliff Ravenscraft? Oh, I'm a husband, I'm a father, and I'm a Bible-believing Christian and the biblical God. And Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior, and he is the Savior of all the world. And anyone who does not accept him, as it states by this creed, this doctrine, they're burning in hell for eternity. And my goal and desire is to save the world through the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And so that was my life for, well, I'd say probably most of my life through September 2011 is when I pretty much started to back off a little bit of that. I started just to say, you know what, I think there might be a different way out there. I love Jesus. I love the stories of his teachings. I believe that if I lived my life the way that I hear what he taught, that would be the most incredible experience on this planet. I don't see that happening in a lot of people's lives that I'm surrounding myself with who claim to say that he is the source and the answer of all things. So, and then what I heard and what happened for me is I'm seeing a lot of damnation and literal damnation, like, listen, I damn you to hell, you know, kind of language.
Yeah.
You know, of people who are not beliefs, who do not agree with the beliefs and doctrines of and creeds of these institutions. And they're saying these Hindus, these Taoists, these, you know, New Age people, they're all going to burn in hell. And yet what I noticed, Kyle, is I started recognize, I began to, because I started an online business where I have people reaching hundreds of thousands of people all over the world, I realized that, man, I'm in relationship with a lot of people who don't believe in Christianity, who are closer to a mirror reflection of the life of Christ than most people I've met in the church.
Interesting.
So that began me doing life outside of the institution while still holding on to a lot of the doctrinal beliefs, if you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that was from September 2011 all the way to the fall of 2020. And that's when I was just randomly studying some stuff and I came across a video, Steve Jobs' favorite book. And I'm like, that sounds interesting. I'm a huge fan of Steve Jobs, read both of his biographies after his death. I was, you know, just an amazing guy, what he's able to achieve and accomplish in the world.
Yeah. Was it Autobiography of a Yogi?
It was Autobiography of a Yogi. And I'm like, okay, so I'm going to go read this book. By the end of that book, two significant beliefs had completely shifted inside of me. And one of them was reincarnation. It's like, you know what? I can't say for certain right now that I believe by reading that book that reincarnation is real. But before I read that book, what does Cliff Ravenscraft feel about reincarnation? On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely is it that reincarnation is a part of the process that is a part of this experience of life? And prior to reading the book, it would be a 1 out of 10, or actually more accurately, it would have been a 0 out of 10. It's like, it's just, it doesn't even equate.
Mm.
After reading the book, I was a 7 out of 10 in a belief in reincarnation. And it's like, wow, there's a lot of questions that I've had over the years. And there's a lot of teachings in the Bible that if you believe in reincarnation, that it answers all of them. It's like, wow, that's amazing. And so then I began to do research. Was there ever a time that Christians believed in reincarnation? And it turns out that, you know, there were various different forms of Christianity before the, you know, couple hundred years later when the Bible came into its existence as it was accepted by the Nicene Creed and all this other stuff. In the early days of Christianity, there were Gnostic Christians and various other sects and it's like, wow. And they very much believed in and taught reincarnation. But eventually there became what's quote unquote the authorized and accepted Orthodox Christianity, which says, no, we don't believe that. And then I'm like, okay, what else is out there that they that used to be a part of this belief? And so then I'm like, okay, I wonder what Hindus do believe. And I start reading the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic scriptures. Yeah. In commentaries from, not from Christians, but from people who live their lives, live that way. Specifically, I want to read from people who lived lives that are like role models. You know, I want to read people's interpretations of these ancient scripture, holy texts, where their experience of life and how they show up in the world and how they treat others is something that I would look up to and aspire to.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the podcast, and I want to let you know that I've got a free book that you can get if you want to tap into more of these resources, and you can get that for free at kylesbook.com. Back to the podcast.
Right.
And so I went to find those people, and I'm reading their commentaries on their scriptures, and it's like, wow. And then I started to see that there's a lot of commonality, and that just opened me up to a whole new world of opening myself to a lot of different beliefs and things of that nature. So that's how I got into it.
Wow, man. Fascinating story, dude. Seriously, it's amazing that you were able to analyze your beliefs and be mature enough to change them based on new information, which is something that a lot of, especially hardcore religious people, aren't able or willing to do, to examine their beliefs and be willing, first of all, examine, but second of all, be willing to make changes to them, which is something that's so rare in the world. So, man, huge props to you for that. It's amazing. Seriously. Now you mentioned,
well, Cliff's ego thanks you for that.
I like the separation, man. I want to get into that a little bit because you mentioned shamanism. Have you ever experimented with plant medicines, psychedelics, anything down that road? Because this is where this, you know, could stem from or lead to, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, I have studied those things. I've not personally partaken in any of those things. I'm not opposed to them. It's not like I'm like, oh man, I really want to go do that. I want to schedule it. It's certainly not something that I'm afraid of. It's not something I could care less about what anybody else thinks about me if I was to go do those things. It's just not currently a desire, and there hasn't yet been some opportunity to participate with ayahuasca or psilocybin or anything else of that nature, that it's never been presented to me at all as an opportunity.
Huh.
And at some level I'm like, I don't currently feel any need for it. I feel like I'm exactly where I need to be at this place in my life. And I don't feel like I'm lacking anything that those, but at the same time, I recognize there's still more that I am unaware of. I'm not a fully enlightened, non-dualistic experience. Mm-hmm. Although I will say that in my times of meditation, I have experienced that blissful state of oneness and unity with all that is from a non-psychedelic perspective, just sitting in deep meditation. So I use Insight Timer and I began studying meditation. And today was my 749th consecutive day of meditation.
Nice.
And so, and out of 749 consecutive days of meditation, I've had 4 deeply metaphysical experiences in a meditative state. So it's not like I'm there every single day, as you might hear from Yogananda and some other, you know, enlightened beings. But I have had 4 different experiences, and there is no way to describe it. I can't describe to you what the experience is. The best that I can do is tell you that there was this one time when I sat in meditation. I probably sat down to do meditation for about 30 minutes, but I left it open-ended. And it, at some point, I completely lost all awareness that I actually had a physical body, that there was a physical reality outside of anywhere, and I just existed. And it seemed to me that I was in there was no, it's crazy because there's no way to talk about it. Was no time. There was no perception of time. But if I were to try to give it a description, it felt like I was there forever. It felt like I was there for days, for months.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, when I came back to the awareness of my physical being, it turned out that I was in meditation for 45 minutes.
Wow. Fascinating, man. I mean, I've had experiences on LSD, for example, where it was like zero ego whatsoever, just a pure dissolution and consciousness and space, no time, no separateness, all is one. Picture it as you're floating in space. You can see the stars, but they're far away. It's pure consciousness, but there's not you looking at it. You are all of it. It is your body. It is, but there's no you. It's all one. And that happened on LSD. It was a terrifying fucking experience. I mean, completely life-changing in so many ways. This happened in 2020. Yeah. And changed everything, man. Oh, are you still there? You're lagging out on me.
What you just described is very similar to my experience, though I can't say that I recall seeing stars, whether near or far. And I don't necessarily recall an experience of that I am all that is. All I can say is that there was absolutely no existence of a guy named Cliff Ravenscraft. There was no physical anything. It was just I can't explain it. I just was. I just was. And there was no experience, there was no object, there was no subject. I just was. And I've experienced that 4 different times in the last 749 days.
I can get there, but it's fucking terrifying because it is literally, it's like you're dying. You don't know this is my experience. I don't know if I'll come back into the ego afterwards because, there are yogic practitioners who have chosen to go into that state and actually have their physical body die. There was a guy in California did it in a hotel. He was in that pure meditative state and said to everybody, okay, so this is my departure. I'm leaving you. And his physical body died in that state. And so that's what I'm terrified of is going into it. It's not in or out. It's like, I don't know how to, you can't explain it, man, but there's a fear going into it, let's say, as of not being able to come back into the ego. And so it's terrifying because to do it, you have to give up 100% control, zero control. It's you 100% acceptance going into it. And that's fucking terrifying, man. It's scary as shit.
My experience is that I have not had any fear whatsoever. And this is something that definitely shifted. I had what I would describe as a full-blown spiritual awakening in from 2020 over the last several years. I've been in a through a spiritual awakening, a significant shift. And one of the things that has died in my belief system is any fear of death. As far as I'm concerned, I know that who I am is what I experienced in those four experiences. That is my essence. Yeah. And that is, and I know that I am that now. And that, yeah. And I also know that this is an illusion, yeah. But it's also real in that I created it. And so at some level, I am definitely in control. And at another level, from persona or ego or this experience of life, I have zero control. And yeah. Yet I am one, and I'm completely fine with what is. So one of the things that I finished about a month ago, an 84-day insight timer course on the Tao. And so just each day really sitting and meditating at a very deep level on just every single of the, I think there's a total of 82 or 83 sayings in the Tao. And I love the idea of just loving what it is. Why should I suffer by resisting what is? So for me, if I die, yeah. I die. I mean, why be afraid? So by the way, exactly. For me, and this is no judgment of you, please understand this, but for me, if I actually fear dying, I actually have to create that death. I have to actually create a vision of what I fear here. And so therefore I'm actually dead. And why, it's like, why did I create that? And so, and yet at the same time, I haven't died. So why don't I live? If I really value living, why don't I just live and live fully and live fully alive? And when I die, why not just accept it, just like I could choose to accept anything and everything else in my life?
The acceptance is the key piece of that, right?
Yeah.
That's where, I mean, let's say in 2021, this happened in 2020. 2021, there was a ton of fear of not being able to hear music anymore. Not being able to, music was a big part of it. Not being able to have the joys of apparent separatism, being able to have the experience of talking with you right now, for example. That was a major fear, especially realizing that there would be no more music. But then you realize that you are the music. And when I meditate, I get into this state. But the way I see it is my ego becomes almost a window. So I'm the pure consciousness detached in space. And I can separate from the ego and observe the ego as almost a window floating in the infinite. And so I still see myself there. So I still get comfortable because I can still go in back into the window if I want to, which is consciousness as I know it. But then there's also this extreme peace, this purity that comes from observing it as separate from the ego, separate from the window that I see you from right now. And from this detached state, it's like beyond detached, because that implies duality, attached and detached. It's from this pure consciousness, I feel the universe as my body, as everything. And so the way I see it is the consciousness that's powering me right now is in the same space as the consciousness powering you behind your ego. And so in that way, we're one, and same with every yeah. human. It's the same consciousness. We're in the same space. And that realization that you can observe it is incredibly powerful, because then you get to connect with people in a way that if you were looking at them as separate from you, you wouldn't be able to. Now, remembering to do it is a whole different story, because yes, you have this ability, but then it's so easy to get so enmeshed in the ego to forget sometimes, especially in emotional experiences, to take a step back and to realize, wait a minute, there is still the ever pervading bliss that's powering this, that I can have this blissful experience whenever I need to.
Yeah.
You got to remember to go out of it.
I love what you're talking about there. And you're right. I have this ability myself and I practice it as frequently as I remember. And that is to observe what's happening from a non-dualistic perspective, that I'm not separate from you and that I'm not this body and you're not that body. We're the same consciousness. I can see that. And when I see that, I see with greater clarity what's actually happening in this material world. And it's easier for me to have a much more equanimity in my life, meaning that I don't experience the high highs and the low lows. I have the ability to have the constant state of just peacefulness and love and unconditional compassion in all circumstances. So just like you're explaining, I sometimes forget. I sometimes have something that happens. I'm engaged in as a husband and as a business owner, and I have certain ways that I build my business, and people schedule calls and do all these different things, and I have beliefs. And remember, it goes all the way back. I have beliefs. And another way of saying this, Cliff has beliefs about what should or should not happen. So for example, the other day, somebody canceled a call last minute. It was the second time they've already rescheduled once. This was a complimentary coaching experience he was going to give to a client or a potential client. They're the ones who requested a chat in the first place because of some things that they were struggling with. And I'm going to speak in first person as Cliff, so you can get a feel for what's going on here. So I got into this situation. It's about time for the call. And then all of a sudden I get a message that says, "Hey, I am so sorry to do this for you. You know what? Completely didn't cross my mind. I double booked today. Can I reschedule again? I'm sorry, Cliff. You know, it turns out I booked another session at the same time I rescheduled this session today. And you know what? I'm paying for this therapy session for somebody else, so I might as well go ahead and do that since I'm not paying you. Obviously, I'm sure you understand. Can I reschedule?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got triggered into anger.
Yeah. Course.
You know, and it's like, wow, what's going on here? It's like, this person's disrespecting me.
Yeah.
You know, this person doesn't value me. You know, do they not see how this could potentially cost me money? I mean, I could have been working with somebody who is an actual potential client or somebody who is a paid client. I mean, this cost me money. Do you know how it's like? And my ego was running all sorts of narratives and there's all these thoughts and I was holding on to all of them. It's like, so how I've learned to get out of that is through a process of self-inquiry. So what I've learned to do whenever I get triggered into a stressed state or emotion, I ask myself, what would I have to think and or believe to feel what I am feeling now? And I start making a bullet point list of all the thoughts. This person doesn't respect me. This person does not value me. This person, I'll never be able to fill this spot now that this person has not given me notice.
Yeah.
Lost opportunity. This is going to cost me money. And so I write all of those down.
All the beliefs and then, of the situation down, by the way. Yeah.
They're all beliefs.
Question is if they're true.
Exactly. And so then I go to this thing called The Work by Byron Katie, which is really powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the first one is, I'm going to lose money as a result of this cancellation. Is this true?
Is that true?
and if I say no, I can go straight to question number three. But if I say yes, I can then ask myself, can I absolutely know for certain that it's true, that this is going to cost me money? And usually I'm able to say, well, not necessarily, potentially, yeah. I could do something else with this 90 minutes that actually might lead to something far more profitable, blah, blah, blah. Right, it's like, okay, so maybe not.
Side. Yeah.
So, and then the third question is, when you hold on to the belief, this is going to cost me a lot of money, then how do you feel and how do you show up? I feel disrespected. I feel I feel like I need, I feel like I'm a victim. I feel like I need to distance myself, and I need to teach the person a lesson by not giving them any more opportunities, you know, all these other things. And so the next question is, who would you be or how would you show up if you didn't hold on to the belief that this is going to cost you money? Gosh, I'd probably have a lot less anxiety, a lot less worry. I'd probably look for opportunities for ways that this is going to open up opportunities for me to do some things. Maybe I was behind. I could see this as a gift. I'd probably extend more grace to this person, you know, show up with more compassion. It's like, huh, wait a second. That person who I would be if I wasn't holding on to this belief, I know that person. That's the non-person. That's the true me. And this is how I get awakened back in through this self-inquiry. Who am I? And by the way, what's really going on here? Is it really about this person, or am I not valuing myself?
Right.
Am I not valuing my own time? You know, am I not respecting myself? You know, in what ways is this showing up in my experience in the material world? Because I am in the material world. I chose to be in the material world. But I also choose to live my life in such a way that I want to be in this world with an ego, with a persona.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be of this world. I don't want to attach my identity to be of that.
Yeah.
I am not of this physical experience. I am of the divine essence of all that is. So I want to be in this world, but not of it. And so what I'm here to learn and evolve through this process of self-inquiry by basically shedding any belief that is keeping me from experiencing the true essence of my divine nature of love, peace, unconditional compassion towards others, and seeing them as myself. I want to get rid of any belief that has me thinking and believing in you being separate from me.
I look at that as empowerment versus disempowered. If something makes me feel disempowered, examine it. Like, for example, with the work by Byron Katie, you get to the core of it. I find that that's what helps me see the other side of the coin, because you can get so captivated by one side that you forget to flip around and look at the other one. And this is the last part of doing the work by Byron Katie is flip it. And you say, so after all of these answers in this work that you've done, then you get to say, so this is not going to cost me money. And you believe that more than you believe the original statement. And now it's like, oh, and if they didn't do that, it would have cost me money. And that's my favorite part, because then you're fully on the other side, the empowered state. So you took a disempowering experience and completely turned it into an empowering one, which is, it gives you control, perceived control over how you observe the situation, for sure. And then the next step is just pure observing and not attaching a story to it, because all of these are still, at the end of the day, stories, which is crucial for the ego. We need to be making stories. But there is the other side of it, where, or beyond the other side, where it's the pure observation of both sides at once. Like, the way I picture it is, I needed something that had two sides, but was also see-through. So I asked ChatGPT one day, this was last year, what's something that's two-sided, but also see-through, so I could see both sides at once. And it told me a gem, like a diamond, for example. You can see both facets on either side. And so that's, I still picture it like a coin with black and white, and mini games within the big coin, mini coins, you could say. But there is also the visualization of seeing it as a gem and being able to see both sides at once. And then it gets me into that state of pure observation and not attaching a story to it. And that's that isness that you're talking about. It just is. You get to observe both sides, and you relax, and there's no story attached to it. And there eventually isn't you that's attaching a story to it. And yeah, it's beautiful, man. It really is.
Yep.
I love it, dude. What are some of the people that you've learned all this from? Who are, like,
oh, wow.
Alan Watts, like, who?
So let's see here. Explored? Alan Watts, Abraham Hicks, Bashar, which is Daryl Inka, it channels Bashar. I'm not sure if you've heard of him. And Esther Hicks channels Abraham Hicks. So there's Paramahansa Yogananda, there would be the Tao Te Ching, so Lao Tzu, who did that. There would be, did we already say Alan Watts? Who else would I say? At some level, Dr. Joe Dispenza, but I've never finished reading any of his books. I really enjoyed Karma, the book Karma by Sadhguru.
Yeah.
And I've started his book Inner Engineering, and I've really connected with a number of his TikTok videos. Don't necessarily feel connected to him in full resonance on an ego level to a lot, some of the things, but you know, I found a lot of value in much of his teaching. Muji is one of my favorite teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Muji is amazing. Seth from Jane Roberts. So if you've ever heard of the book Seth Speaks, or another one is, I'm currently reading right now, The Nature of Personal Reality. It's another Seth material. Mm. She was back in the 1960s, or actually late 60s, early 70s. She channeled all of these books from an entity known that goes by Seth. Another Dronvolo Melchizedek in his Flower of Life, or Secret of the Flower of Life, or something like that. And then Living in from the Center of the Heart, or something like that. Anyway, Dronvolo Melchizedek, The Alchemist, The Kabbalion. I could go on.
You could go on. Jesus.
Since the fall of 2020, I read and or study somewhere between 1 to 5 hours a day, this kind of stuff.
Wow, man, you could tell. You could definitely tell. Absolutely. I'm surprised you haven't experimented with psychedelics, man. And I feel like it rally, but I'm not one to prescribe them because
it just hasn't. I mean, I follow a lot of creators on different platforms who do retreats and stuff like that. I have close friends who have been on, who have done all of these things, and nobody has ever personally said, "Hey, Cliff, I want to invite you to fill in the blank, and here's what do you think about it?" That has never been presented to me, and to this point, I have never felt any compulsion to seek any of those opportunities out. I'm aware of all of them. I'm fascinated by what I hear people to share of their experiences. Oh, by the way, Carlos Castaneda is another one. A lot of his stuff as well. But yeah, like I said, not opposed to it. Totally open to just about anything that seemingly doesn't. I'm open to a lot of things. Just to say.
Okay, fair enough, man. The way I did it was alone. I did mushrooms in college and, like, you know, kind of experiences with other people, but with the acid, I bought it alone off the internet one day, and not even the dark web, just off the internet. And I experienced that. And then in Canada, you can buy it online. It's becoming decriminalized, which is interesting.
They're doing all sorts of stuff, especially with psilocybin and things of that nature. Ayahuasca, you can go and do. Not opposed to any of that stuff.
Beautiful, man. It's very, very cool. So, dude, we touched on some, like, we went as deep as you can possibly go in this interview, which is beyond depth in itself. So thank you for that, man. Anything else that you want to add before we kick this off here?
You know, it depends. It depends on whatever anybody's got going on in this world. I would just love to say this. If anybody's watching this and you're on the journey of trying to figure out, hey, I have been exploring all of these things that you guys have talked about. If you have felt any guilt or shame as a result of doing that because it goes against everything you've ever been taught,
mm-hmm.
I would encourage you to seek out some folks who could help support, who have been through that. I personally am very much interested in helping people who are coaches learn how to build profitable businesses. So if you're out there and you've got a gift and a passion for compassionately showing up for people and serving them, and you believe that you can add tremendous value to their life, and you're still in the pursuit of making a living for yourself in the way that our economy is currently set up, I do a lot of things teaching people how to build profitable coaching businesses and build online businesses, content creator kind of stuff. Those are the kind of things that I do. And if anybody's ever interested in any of that stuff, you can reach out to me. Just go to my website, cliffravenscraft.com, and click on the Work With Me tab, and you can read all about that.
Awesome, man. Beautiful. What about some lead magnets? Do you have the email capture, something that you can give away that would get somebody's email address? What do you have?
So I did a opening keynote address. I have a annual conference that I was doing before COVID. It was called Free the Dream. And the opening keynote address is called All Beliefs Have Consequences. Mm. And in this opening keynote address, it's 60 minutes. I talk about, you know, the fact that every experience that we have in life is determined by what we believe. So whatever results you have right now are a result of actions you have or have not taken. And all the actions that you have or have not taken have been a response or have been the result of what you are thinking and feeling in any given moment. And how you are thinking and feeling in any given moment is determined by these beliefs. And most of them you're unconscious of. Mm-hmm. So in this opening keynote address that I do, I share with you four things. Number one, I help you understand what are the limiting beliefs that are actually holding you back. How do you get them from being unconscious to actually bringing them up to where you could write them down and see them on a piece of paper or type them into a document that you could see? Oh my gosh, I had no idea that was there. So number one, I'll teach you how you can discover what limiting beliefs are currently holding you back. Number two, I'll help you discover what the source of that belief is so that you can actually verify and confirm that it is not yours. It is not absolute truth. It came from someone else. It's an outside thing that you just agreed with and you've been holding it in this luggage ever since. You've been lugging it around for a very long time. So number two, you'll discover the source. Number three, I'll teach you how to disassociate or break up with that limiting belief. And the fourth thing that you'll learn is how to condition empowering alternative beliefs that will take you to where you want to create whatever you want to create in your life. So in essence, whatever your results are right now, it's because of the consistent actions you've taken. And those actions are consistently happening consistently because of your consistent thinking and feeling. Mm-hmm. That's because the beliefs have never been changed. Go and watch this video. You'll learn how to change your beliefs so that you'll never be able to think and feel that way again, which means that you will always take different actions and you're guaranteed to get different results as a result. You can get this for free at mindsetanswerman.com/free.
Sweet. Love it, dude. Perfect. I love it. That's a beautiful place to wrap it up because it kind of leaves the loop open that we started at the beginning, which is how do you identify and more or less shift and manipulate beliefs that dictate actions at the end of the day and dictate the way that you look at yourself in the world. So Cliff, man, thank you so much, dude. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's so cool to be able to dig into this stuff with you. Seriously.
Kyle, I'm super thrilled that we had this opportunity to connect in this space.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. And if you want to get a free copy of my book, go to kylesbook.com and you can get a copy there. I'll talk with you soon.